This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
All right, welcome to the show, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City. This is John Massengill. I am in my studio in Austin, Texas, and also have Jonathan Green and Les Kaiser back on the show, both at their studios. How's it going, boys?
Pretty good.
Good and hot. It's Austin, Texas, and summertime. It's hot.
Man, it feels...
Yeah, you can hold it when you're inside.
It feels miserable outside. Good to be in the air conditioning. Man, I'm really excited about our show today. We have a guest on the show that is really a longtime star of Formula One and been in and out of Formula One and just one of the most respected names in Formula One. We have Gary Anderson's going to join us here in just a moment. And Jonathan, I know you go back. You've known Gary back for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Gary's history, I hope you'll share a little bit of his background because, Gary was one of the originals at Jordan and has been part of the Formula One scene for many years, both at the sharp end of getting the cars ready and technical directing and helping design and all those factors in Formula One, but also of late has been a major media player as well as guests on many shows around Britain and around the world. You know, basically giving his take on Formula One. So at this time is perfect because we've got so much to talk about with Austria coming online, the new budget cap, the change basically of Formula One. We are going through a change. COVID, whether we like it or not, has created a rare stop in this sport that's never really happened since it began in 1950. So it's going to be very interesting times this next 6 months, I think.
Well, we are 2 weeks away, guys. Can you believe it? We're actually seeing cars on track in Austria. So I'm just
so ready.
Over the top excited. Yeah, I am ready. And I think a lot of people are ready. Well, speaking of ready, I think we have our guest on the line. So let's go ahead and bring him on. And we're very excited to welcome Gary Anderson to the show. Gary, welcome to Speed City.
Hi, everybody. Yep, it's great to be there. Speed City, sounds great to me.
Yeah, that's right. 2 weeks away. Well, we're really excited to have you. And yeah, why don't you give everyone a little background here in the United States about your career, Gary?
Well, yeah, it started a long time ago. I lived in Ireland. I was born in Ireland. And when I was 20 years old, I decided to go off and see pastures green, I suppose you might call it, or pastures new. I came over to England, and I worked around a little bit, as Irishmen do when they come to England. They have to get a job on a building site. So I did that. And I was a mechanic, and suddenly this offer came up to go to work for a company called Brabham. It was owned by Bernie Ecclestone at that point in time, and I was building Formula 3 cars, Formula 2 cars for sale, basically. And a job came up on the Formula 1 team in 1973, and I decided to take it. My sort of job application was if I could lift a DFV engine, which was a Formula 1 engine at that point, a V8 engine, into the back of a transit van, the job was mine. So I was a good Irishman with a strong back. I did it. I've been paying the price ever since, I think. But so I started off as a mechanic there, and I worked myself up to chief mechanic. I left Brabham, then went to McLaren. And I worked at McLaren again. I worked from being a mechanic up to chief mechanic. Then I started my own company called Anson, which we built Formula 3 cars, Super V cars, raced in America. So, you know, fairly checkered career. I did a bit of time in the mid-80s with Gallus Racing in America, IndyCars. Jeff Brabham, Panzer Carter, Roberto Moreno. Came back to the UK and set up a Formula 3000 team with a guy called Roberto Moreno again, and they won the 1988 Formula 3000 Championship. And then Eddie Jordan phoned me up one day and said he wanted to build a Formula 1 car, and would I come and design it? And I told him, no, you're mad, you're crazy. I think through the years I've proved that he is mad and crazy, but I decided to go and do it. And that Jordan Formula 1 team was born in 1991. And from there on in, I was, you know, involved in the design of cars. My era was that, you know, you could improve yourself. Today, it's very, very different. You know, there isn't an opportunity. There isn't the open doors for somebody like me. You've had, got to have qualifications coming out of your ears. I don't have any of those. But I was, you know, hard taught and learned as much as I could and tried to put it all into practice. So from then, I was involved in the design and technical directorship of Jordan and then Stuart Grand Prix. And then one thing led to another, and just basically you get burned out by it all. So I decided to retire from the active cliff face as such, and I got involved with the media and trying to bring to the people a bit more of what goes on in Formula One rather than this sort of black art that seems to be there, because, you know, yes, it's very, very complicated. It's, you know, very sophisticated. It's, you know, engineering at its highest level, but it's still just real engineering, and it really is, should be motorsport, and it should be a sport. And I try to bring that level to the people who watch it and who love it.
Gary, it's an interesting time, and I know you're right at the heart of it, being in England and being near Silverstone and so on. Give us an idea of what's been talked about in the pubs, so to speak, about the return of Formula One, because this is a rare time that Formula One has been effectively on hold. It's unprecedented, I think, in its history. What's the general feeling about going back to racing and how successful they can be in this short period of 2020?
Well, you know, I've got a lot of friends, obviously, involved in the cliff face of Formula One at the moment, and there isn't much chat going on in the pub. The pubs have all been shut over here, which is a bit of a disappointment. But, you know, they're all a bit worried. They're all a bit unknown about it, to be honest. That's the biggest thing, I suppose, because they don't know really how it's going to happen. You know, Formula One's a huge conglomerate of people, and Liberty Media, obviously, are pulling the strings to try and make it all work, because if it doesn't work, the teams financially will suffer dramatically, and so will Liberty Media. So at the end of the day, they've got to try to make something happen. And I've said a few times in my media stuff that, you know, the first thing you have to do is put together a calendar that might not be accurate, but at least it gives the team something to work towards. And I think that's what's happening now. I mean, we've got the first 9 races, I think it is, are confirmed. Some double headers, but they're all European races. They're all trying to contain it as best possible. They're going to fly in sort of bubbles of people, and they're going to stay in different hotels in bubbles of people. So they're going to try to contain it as best possible, but get some races. It's not like NASCAR or IndyCars, because we have, you know, Formula One has people coming from all over the world to it. You know, the Japanese with the Honda engine, you know, everywhere they're coming from, all over the world, to be honest. So it's not one country trying to contain itself. So I think it's a bit unknown. And Austria have opened the doors. Red Bull, you know, Dieter Matthews owns the circuit that they're going to race in Red Bull. So he made things happen, the Red Bull Ring. And that is an opportunity to see how to lay the land down and how to make it all work and try to make sure that the health of the people involved is the priority.
Well, you know, Gary, I want to ask you, just stepping back a little bit, you said, obviously, we got 8 races, that's been announced, it's official, but we just don't know what to expect after that. Do you have any insight? Do you have any, even a best guess of how many races we think we're going to get this season?
Well, I do genuinely think we'll get double that. But I think the majority is going to be in Europe. I think we're going to struggle to go abroad, you know, internationally. Because just it is so difficult just controlling what's happening in other countries. There will be some, I think, international races, but it's just one of those sort of situations. I think that starting in Europe, they're going to learn how to sort of make it work, how to manage it, how to make it into a race, I suppose. You know, it's not deviating much from what happens, but you know, the public and the viewers, the spectators at the track, they're such a big part of what makes it work that doing it sort of to an empty grandstand, I'm not sure the motivation will just be right there. It's a bit strange. You know, that we've got a thing like the World Touring Car Championship, for example, and that's all the manufacturers of touring cars. And they really race at places where there is no crowd whatsoever. Whereas you take the British Touring Car Championship, which is, again, just tin-top cars, they race in circuits in the UK just full of people. It's the people that make the racing. And this is going to be a whole new thing for Formula One to try to understand how it works, because it is just going to be something that's about scoring points, not about anything else. You know, TV coverage is obviously going to be there, but the whole thing works for the people at the circuit. You know, the Silverstone we have over the 3 days, you know, 250,000 people or something, they're not going to be there anymore. So, yeah, I remember Jackie Stewart telling me he would drive around the track and he'd see somebody in the grandstand with a pink T-shirt on or whatever it was, and he'd know whenever they moved seats because he'd be keeping an eye on them and he'd, you know, see this thing standing out in the crowd. The crowd ain't going to be there anymore, so it's going to be very, very different.
Gary, yeah. You touched on a good point. Yes, there's going to be TV coverage, but honestly, the TV coverage is very limited or very sparse, or I'll say very concentrated in some ways. But they're talking about media folks being limited to as few as 10 people on site for the race, not of any entity, but as a collective, 10 people on that. I find that's going to really limit the coverage that you're going to be able to get in all the different languages that go out for Formula One. What are your thoughts around that?
Yeah, I think it's a bit strange because, you know, when you haven't got the audience, when you haven't got the viewer, or the spectator, sorry, at the track, then I think the media needs to be bigger because it needs to put it out to those people that would have come to the race. And I just sort of was working out, reading today, that they're shortening down the grid procedure just to 30 minutes instead of 40 minutes as it was last year. But you're allowed 40 people from each team onto the grid initially, and then it's cut down to, I think it's 15 or something, with 5 minutes to go. But 40 people from each team is 10 teams. That's 400 people on the grid in a fairly confined area, plus all the officials and all that sort of stuff. And yet, media-wise, which is what takes it out to the world, to the public, to the sponsors, to everybody, it's very limited. So I think they might have sort of forgotten what makes the, you know, what substitutes a payroll. Excuse me a second. Sorry about that. Carry on.
That's all right. Well, Gary, you know, this shortened season has brought up so many questions about everything from what we might see at some of the races. You know, we got these double headers. We're talking different tires now and everything from reverse grids. What do you expect to see that would be different this year?
Well, the thing I can see that they're heading into these races and they're not actually ending up doing anything different. I mean, the reverse grid thing, I've been a bit of a fan of it, not because necessarily that it should count for the World Championship, but at the end of the day, I think everybody's recognised that Formula One could do with something that might spice it up a little bit. And we talk about the cars and changing them aerodynamically and writing the regulations so the cars will be better in traffic. The biggest thing you could do is make the teams design cars that have to work in traffic. And the only way you'll do that is by having the fast cars at the back and the slower cars at the front. To force the teams into not designing a car that basically is at its ultimate performance on that one lap in qualifying on its own in a clear track. Because if you can do that on a Saturday, you know, as we've seen many, many, many times, Sunday becomes a foregone conclusion because, you know, the guy on pole position, unless something stupid happens, will normally be able to go on and win the race. So they're trying to write the regulations to make the cars better in traffic than overtaking possible. But yet now an opportunity has come up to try something different because this season should all be about trying something different. And the reverse grid thing would be something that would allow that to see if it worked And it was only a reverse grid for qualifying. You know, basically the championship after it, I think it was too early to try and start it in Austria because you needed championship points. You need to see a bit of a rhythm going. So I think maybe race five or something, in my opinion, should have been qualifying would be the reverse championship. We all have settled down a little bit. We'd have seen who's strong, who wasn't. And then on a Saturday, you had this shortened reverse championship grid for the qualifying for the main race on Sunday. And the main race would still be the same. The main race would be the one that would count towards the World Championship. So it was just an opportunity to sort of slip something else in there and see how it would work. If it didn't work, nothing lost because the season's a mess anyway. So, you know, I think it's wrong for people that are standing in the way of it. And unfortunately, the people that are standing in the way of it are the people that would lose most probably, i.e. Toto Wolff and Mercedes, by having to try to qualify from the back of the grid on a Saturday afternoon. So, you know, that's always going to happen, isn't it? Why would they want to put their hand up and say, oh, this is a good idea, we'll really screw ourselves here, and we'll put ourselves to the back of the grid and see what we can do. You know, that's not the way it works. So I think opportunity is here to do something, and Liberty Media, FIA, and whoever else governs this sport needs to sort of welcome it with open arms and try and do something.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly, not in Mercedes' best interest or Ferrari, but maybe in the sport's best interest. Well, guys, we need to take a quick break. Gary, if you can hang on through the break with us, we'll be back and more with Gary Anderson. Listen to Speed City. Back to these messages.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
At Circle Brewing, the belief is less is more when it comes to brewing a better beer. You won't find any chemicals or additives, only water, malt, hops, and yeast, and absolutely nothing else. Just simple ingredients and outstanding taste. It's German purity with Texas ingenuity. Find the brews on tap all over town, in your favorite store, or drop by the tap room at 2340 West Breaker Lane, open Thursday and Friday nights and weekends. Log on to CircleBrewing.com. Circle Brewing Company. Born, bred, and brewed in Texas.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Max Verstappen, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. Our guest today is Gary Anderson, and a Formula One veteran and Formula One media member insider. And Les Kaiser, you had a question for Gary.
I did, and it's around the topic of the reverse grid. Mm-hmm. I'm still on the fence, I'm undecided about reverse grid. But Gary, I'm with you on let's try something. Let's stir up some excitement. But as we go to reverse grid, I feel like there needs to be an element that considers the distance we drove, a la 24-hour Le Mans. You might not have started, or you may have crossed the line first, but somebody behind you that improved more so throughout the race may have actually beat you. Gary, what is your perspective on that?
mean, my main objective with having something like the reverse grid is to force the teams into building a car that would aerodynamically be more robust in traffic. Nothing else to do with the fact of that it would influence the championship. It obviously will do if the grid changes dramatically. But at the end of the day, you know, if you put the fastest driver in the fastest car on pole position, what do you expect to happen on Sunday afternoon? That is what's going to happen for sure. So on the way there, we've seen many, many times a car will catch another car because of whatever reason, and he just can't pass. He can't get within 20 metres of it just from the fact of the turbulence. So if we could do something that would force the teams to design a car that's a bit different, that actually ends up with more robust aerodynamic surfaces on it. I mean, it's like an aeroplane, you know. If it's going to fly high altitude, super sleek wing section, everything, it'll fly along there all quite happily. But if it's going to fly through the clouds all the time in bad weather from, you know, I don't know, I actually fly from Chicago down to Indianapolis quite a lot when I was out in the States. And the weather there was pretty bad usually. So the thing, they're bouncing around all over the place. Now, a racing car is just exactly the same. You know, once you get behind another car, things just bouncing around all over the place and you lose a lot of grip. So you need to force the teams to design these cars. And I don't disagree with you, the fact that the guy on the back of the grid would start, well, it's 8 meters, I think it is, between each grid position. So you're not talking a huge amount of distance. But I'm sure there's some formula there that might work out for you to say who made up the bit most positions could be multiplied by X, Y, Z or whatever. There may be something in there. But from my point of view, the most important thing is to not try to change the regulations to make the racing better, but to try to make the teams design cars that will make the racing better. And if you can do that by having a season of opportunity to try something, then you haven't wasted that season. The end result, you know, I'm pretty sure it would still be the same thing, because it wouldn't be every race you'd have this reverse grid thing. It would be, you know, four or five of them, six of them maybe at the end of the day, just to test it out to see what the different situation would create.
Gary, I want you to put your technical director hat on and just look at the budget caps. If you were back at Jordan now, or let's take a team that we all follow, which is Haas, a midfield team, will this eventually play to the advantage of the midfield teams, or do you think that the haves will continue to be the haves and it won't make that much of a difference to have even a lessening budget cap, which is going to, we hear, go down year on year. What's your take if you were running a midfield team now?
I genuinely think that the budget cap that they have now, it was $145 million for next year, will actually separate the haves from the half-nots more, because half of the grid, the half-nots, would just dream of $145 million. You know, that's a huge budget. I never had anything ever near that in my life. If I had $45 million, I think that would have been a fantastic budget. I don't think I've ever had anything like that. But at $145 million now, plus the drivers, plus the three top earners in the company, plus the commercial department, plus the marketing department, the entertainment, all the paraphernalia at the track, that's all on top of that $145 million. So now, take a situation. You know your budget spend. So for a team like Mercedes, they can know they've got $145 million to spend on their car. The top three earners, they can hire the best. They have probably the best, but they can hire the best. They can pay them what they want. They can hire the best drivers. They can have the best commercial department to bring in that money. So their $145 million, because they have very deep pockets, will turn into $300 million very, very quickly. You take Haas. It's got $145 million. It can't afford to hire Lewis Hamilton, Sebastian Vettel on top of that. They have to have drivers that will either bring them a few quid or at least come for, you know, the $1-2 million payment. So the have-nots can't hire the big drivers, the top drivers. So the top guys have the opportunity to do everything. Now, if that budget had been set at, let's say, just as an example, $200 million, and it had to cover everything, then a team like Mercedes would have to make a decision on whether they could build a car that was going to be better than actually building a car and employing Lewis Hamilton. So that extra $40 million, let's say, that Lewis Hamilton might want, they'd say, okay, we could hire Kevin Magnussen. He'll come for $3 million, $5 million, whatever it be, and that gives us another $35 million to spend on the car. And we can do a better job for $35 million than Lewis Hamilton can be. They'd have to make a decision. That's the important thing, is forcing these teams into making a decision. And they haven't done that. They haven't used that opportunity. So they've got a budget cap that's open-ended, really. And the guys with the deep pockets will spend the money.
Interesting. So, you know, it's in the past in different sports, and I think of baseball and basketball and football, we've seen salary caps for the teams. What if we were to draw that towards a salary cap for the driver to kind of even what you're going to spend on the driver? But of course, if you win races, maybe the driver gets more of that purse for winning that race.
Yeah.
That an option in this crazy world and time?
I agree 100% with you. You know, someone has to be done about it, because we've got very, very good drivers. And I mean, one guy that I think is a very, very good driver is George Russell. You know, he every time he tests the Mercedes, he's quick. He's as good as the top guys in it. Any circuit they've gone to. He's got a good attitude. He's kept his head down with Williams in a very, very tricky season. But he's always given it his best. And, you know, whenever you look at, I always look at the first lap of a race as to who, you know, makes up ground, who doesn't, you know, how they handle that first lap of the race. And he's been very good. He's a very good survivor of that first lap from starting at the back of the grid. So, you know, you've got George Russell, who, you know, he'd drive for nothing, basically, because that's what he has to do. You know, he has to get himself in there somehow. Whereas Lewis Hamilton, you know, he wants his $40 million, $50 million. He's got the credibility for it. He's got six times world champion or whatever it is. So, you know, he's got that credibility. But at the end of the day, both of those guys, other than the experience that Lewis Hamilton has, could probably end up doing the same job as far as pure out-and-out lap time is concerned in the same car. And there's a massive, massive difference in the amount of money. And so something has to be done there where, as I say, there's a flat line payment for the drivers. And then, you know, points make prizes. And you take home what you earn, basically. You have to get out there and do it on a Sunday afternoon. And, you know, that's what it should be all about.
Well, Gary, what about the prediction for the season? You know, it's so crazy right now. We don't know what to expect. I mean, obviously, we think Mercedes and Ferrari and Red Bull are going to do well. Yeah. But do you have any surprise predictions at all for the season? Please?
No, not really. I mean, the top three should be the top three. I'm a fan of Red Bull from the fact that I like Max Verstappen. You know, I like his dad. I'm around long enough to know his dad very well. But, you know, Max is one of these guys who's committed to driving. He's just a real racer. Red Bull have let him down in the past a little bit because they haven't started the season very strongly. So they need, if they can start the season on a strong foot, the first three or four races are going to be important for them. They'd be my candidate for the championship. Honda have obviously got to play a big part in that, but you know they're doing a pretty good job now. They've really come on strong in the last year. I think there's a bit of a mess going on at Mercedes with things that are, you know, potentially changing. Toto Wolff doesn't seem to be as committed as he normally is because the management at Mercedes have changed. I'm not sure he gets on quite as well with that management structure. They've also had a change at HPD, the engine development group. So, you know, Andy Carroll, he's been a big leader there for a long time, and you know, he's moving on now at the end of this month. Everything like that, all that sort of change just disrupts everything a little bit. It might just work as well with the new people, but there's always this time lag before everything starts working together correctly after there is a change. So whether it's 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, whatever, that time lag will affect them. So I'm a Red Bull fan, as I say, Max Verstappen fan. I think Mercedes are a bit of a mess. Ferrari, who knows? Jesus, who knows? Anything can happen, to be honest. But if it does happen well for Ferrari starting, they'll probably trip up over themselves as the season goes by, because that seems to be what they sort of do quite a lot of. As for the rest of the teams, again, you know, Force India, or as it was Force India, Racing Point now, they, you know, they built a sort of Mercedes replica, I suppose you might call it, the pink Mercedes, and they should do a strong job with that car because they're a good team. So I would imagine that they might drop into the fourth place in the championship again, and closely followed by McLaren, because McLaren are getting stronger. And as for the rest, who knows? You know, Haas, I'd love to see do a good job. It's just one of those sort of things, the situations where last year they started well and they sort of developed themselves into a big hole. They never really got out of it. They need to not do that this year because you can't afford to do that and let points slip away from you. So it's going to be an interesting season because it's all going to be short, you know, concise, confined. And the same circuit, you know, two weekends in a row, it's going to be funny to see what happens, whether some teams get it wrong the first weekend and actually get it better the second weekend, because that's normally what you never see that. You never see that continuity to try and sort of get your car optimized after you've had all the data from running. So it's interesting to see which team works best for that to try and sort of make themselves have a better second weekend than they had the first weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be fascinating to see how this season plays out in general. But well, Gary Anderson, we really appreciate you coming on Speed City. We love having your experience and insight and being able to pick your brain. We thank you so much for coming on the show. And yeah, we'll try to get you back on again.
No problem. Pleasure to do it.
Thanks, Gary. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Thank you, Gary.
Bye. Bye.
All right, well, let's go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to continue our Formula One preseason show, and we'll be back after these messages.
When you're looking for traditional Tex-Mex, look no further than an Austin favorite, One in a Million. Serving original family recipes since 1980 and located just minutes from downtown at 2300 East Cesar Chavez, One in a Million has your Tex-Mex fix every day of the week from 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Breakfast is served all day. Homemade migas, enchiladas, and menudo. And try the Don Juan taco. Some say it's big enough to feed a family of four. One in a Million. Online at oneinamillion.com.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at motivationusa.com. That's motivationusa.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Talk 13-7, the right choice.
Hi, this is Mario Andretti, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back to the show. We've had a few people ask why we're not taking calls from callers, and right now, during the pandemic, we are pre-recording these preseason shows on Saturday, so that's why you're not able to call in. But when we get started in 2 weeks and back on our Formula One pre and post race shows, of course, we'll be taking calls, and we want your calls because we'll have Dave O'Neill back in the show. Dave's not with us today, obviously, but we want to get you guys to ask questions. I mean, a former Formula One team manager at our disposal, and we want you guys to call and talk to him. But today,
I got to jump in there. Even better, he was at Haas, so we're practically in the
exactly.
He helped get Haas off the ground, yeah.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, I wanted to talk about someone you've met in person a couple of times, Alex Zanardi. He had a pretty bad crash, and we're still waiting on all the news. I think the latest is that he's in hospital in critical condition. But, man, he apparently in Italy, he is just a superstar, and all over the world, really. But, I mean, on all the social media, it's just been totally full of, you know, best wishes and all that, but it's just horrible.
The perseverance there that he's demonstrated is huge. And Jonathan, I know you followed a lot of that back through his injuries, through all of his recovery and everything.
Yeah, I mean, for me, Alex Zanardi is probably one of the most inspiring guys I've ever met, because not only did he recover from losing both his legs in that terrible incident in Indy, he came back and started winning without legs against perfectly able guys. An incredible feat when you think about it. He then went on to win an Olympic gold medal in a wheelchair, and it looks as though the injury that he's had was while doing a race in that chair. If anybody can come through this, it'll be Alex Zanardi, because he's faced more adversity than any other driver I've ever known. So in that respect, I wish him well. But an amazing story. And he can't get a break, the poor guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just horrible. And I know the whole world is waiting to see how quickly he can get better. But, well, I also want to, you know, we had our first preseason Formula One show back in March. And I kind of want to pick up where we left off, because we were talking back then about the Mercedes-Dass system and Ferrari cheating. But starting with the Mercedes-Dass system, Jonathan, I want to ask your opinion. Do you think that they're going to roll that out in Austria? And do you think they're going to roll it out during the race? Maybe they'll roll it out during practice. Because, you know, if they roll it out during practice, it's not illegal to roll that out then. And you know, I guess teams could protest in theory, but if they do roll it out into race, do you think that immediately Red Bull or Ferrari or someone else will protest?
Well, let's first of all explain what DAS is.
Yeah, there you go.
Effectively, when we saw the practice or we saw the testing shots, they've developed a system where the wheels can be moved by pulling the steering wheel back, and that changes the camber of the wheels, which is very clever because it makes the car more aerodynamic in a straight line. And then they can go back.
Pilot?
Yeah.
Like
a pilot. Exactly. I'm torn with this, because they are going to ban it in 2021, right? So they can only use it for this 6-month period of what we've got left of 2020 and however many races we get in. So, and as you say, that doesn't mean that teams won't protest it or try to develop their own systems. To answer that question, no, they're not going to develop their own systems, because it's going to be banned next year. How much have Mercedes put into this technology, which is brilliant? I mean, it's one of those real innovations. So that's why I'm torn, because Formula One is all about creating innovations that eventually end up on a road car. And this could be a really, really ingenious way of developing aerodynamics and so on and so forth. So, and that's the spirit of Formula One. So I don't understand why they're banning it for 2021, unless it doesn't follow the spirit of the rules. But you've got to think that Mercedes aren't that dumb that they wouldn't have thought of that before they did it. So I'm torn, because I think they've done a brilliant job of developing something that nobody else has thought of. They've brought it to fruition, and now they can't use it. So it kind of takes away the whole spirit of what Formula One was designed around, which is to be innovative in an environment.
Do we know where Jim Hall is from Chaparral Racing? Remember when he did the wing that was actuated by the foot? And it revolutionized the downforce for his car racing. And they banned it as soon as he started beating everybody with it. I'm with you, Jonathan. This is creative. This is ingenuity at its best. and now we're saying no.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think they're going to say no and go home.
It doesn't make any sense to me because, Formula One is all sorts of things, but it's always held technology and the advancement of technology as its number one. I mean, we talk about it being NASA on wheels, and it very much is. And if you stop that innovation, I mean, let's say you're Haas and you come up with an idea, but you fear that the FIA will ban it and everybody will protest it, then you're not going to waste $35 million developing it.
Here's what I say. Since this is driver controlled, he is physically moving it like we talked about the pilot's yoke in the airplane. He is physically moving that. I am fine with that. What I'm not fine with is if we put a computer in control with a million sensors to measure everything and finally critique that yoke placement or the pull or yaw to it. I say run with it. Let's do this. This is what we're wanting to see. We're wanting to see innovation and creativity and this certainly is out of the box thinking. I hate that phrase, but this is out of the box.
Well, and it's simple too. That's what I love about it. Unless you're talking about, it appears to be simple. Obviously, I don't know, but by the way it's designed and what it does, it looks very simple. And Jonathan, you talked about aerodynamics, but also it's straightening the wheels, less drag, not only aerodynamically but frictionally. So it's just such a simple thing, and I agree with you both that's what F1 is all about, and we need to keep that going. But
what we don't know is, are they going to use it at Spa as they come up the top of Eau Rouge, and then he pulls back, and then he pulls back a little bit further, and he gets completely airborne?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, no. Exactly. Is there some requirement to stay on the ground? Or are we now? What are we doing?
Yeah. What are the rules on actually being in touch with the ground?
Yeah. Hey, Jonathan, you put in the show notes something else. McLaren now, the latest team to talk about being up for sale. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting because you wouldn't think that the mighty Woking McLaren team would be in any search of money. But clearly, the combination of not getting, a few bad years in Formula One where they haven't had the money from being at the sharp end, which is a lot of money, from the organizers, and that's how the money is handed out. So they've lost that because they haven't been successful in the last few years. Now COVID has pushed them back further. They have a car development sports car program as well, which they want to keep going. They produce motor cars as well. So obviously they've got problems. Even I've heard that Latifi's father has invested somewhere in the region of $200 million into the company as a potential shareholder, but it's not enough, and they're looking for more budget and potentially investors, and they're not out of the woods in terms of potentially selling it. They haven't gone public as Williams did and said we are selling Williams. They haven't said that, but they've kind of put it out there that they would be willing to look for, or that they want to physically get investors into the company.
Yeah, this is going to be one to watch for sure.
You know, it's interesting because they have so much technology to draw on, and so much other businesses, in the IT world. That's a big name. And so I'm really interested to see if they start leveraging some of these other technologies. They moved the headquarters of the McLaren Sports Car Group to Dallas, to the Dallas area. I find that really interesting. There's one other name that news that came out this week that Elon Musk is truly moving, intending. He is looking at property on the edge of Austin, Texas here.
Yeah, right up by Coda, actually.
Yeah, a couple of minutes from Coda. I got a question. Why did he go near Coda? Because I'm glad he's come to Austin, Texas, but why did you go near Coda? There's a lot of property available, less expensive, not near Coda, things like that. I just have to, I can't discount any thoughts about why he's near the only Formula One track in the United States.
I love where you're thinking less, but I think that honestly, that land is cheap. I mean, that's out east of town. There's anywhere near Austin, that's going to be about as cheap as land as you can get near Austin. It just happens to be by the airport and Coda.
Yeah, and I would argue that it's a bonus that they've got the track there, and I'm sure he would probably invest in a lot of money in track days and test time for his cars. But I would have argued that the tax in California versus the tax in Texas is probably the bigger incentive.
Oh yeah, that's what this is all about. The school district out there has already, you know, committed $60 million tax break, plus the city and maybe the state are talking about additional monies. But this is
and
a serious
Bus
thing.
Got that money to start with from the government. He got a loan. He got a grant from the government to build his factory in Midgley. And I think he's been quite vociferous about not being happy in California and the way things are run over there. And he's been quite out about his feelings on being in California.
Yeah, come on, Elon. We'll fix that accent and give you a Texas.
the Musk McLaren Challenge. Musk McLaren Motorsport Challenge at COTA. How about that?
There you go. I like
it. Elongated racing.
All right. Well, we're going to leave it at that, Les. We got to go to break. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk a little Formula One, a little other motor racing. We are going to talk a little bit of NASCAR because I want to talk about what they did last week. We really didn't get to talk about it on the last show. You listen to Speed City live from Austin, Texas, back after these messages.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell FIA and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky, the source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing, WindingRoadRacing.com.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers. The best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride. Or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Austin's Talk 1370.
Hi, this is Gene Haas, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Welcome back to the show. Speaking of Gene Haas, there was all the rumors once again about the Haas. I see you shaking your head, Jonathan, about the Haas F1 team up for sale. What have you heard, Jonathan?
Can I say it? Storm in a teacup.
That's right. That's a quote, actually, isn't it? From Gunther.
Yes, from Gunther Steiner, yeah. Says it's a load of rubbish.
Well, speaking of the Haas team, as if you've been following lately, we had Günther on our very first preseason show here, and we're going to have Günther back on the show several times throughout the year. You know, when we start up our preseason, our pre and post race shows that we do live. And by the way, the first one, of course, is going to be July 5th. It'll be bright and early at 7 a.m. Central Time. So go to our website, Speed City Broadcast, speedcitybroadcast.com, to check out how to listen to that. But we're going to be back on the air with those shows, and Günther's going to join us throughout the season. And of course, Dave O'Neill will be back. Apparently Dave was up at Road Atlanta and had one of the cars he was working
Road
on.
America.
I mean, Road America had a car crash, so he's not able to join us right now. That's what happened to Dave. So yeah. Jonathan. Jonathan, I want to get your opinion on something, because I've been thinking about this F1 reserve drivers. They've kind of come into the spotlight because of COVID, right? Because the way that F1 has set up the procedures is that if a driver tests positive, then they step back, and then a reserve driver could step in. So it doesn't stop the whole season. So all of a sudden it looks like, okay, maybe we actually have reserve drivers that have become more important. And I want to get your take on that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting story. I mean, it's an obvious story in terms of, you know, if Lewis Hamilton got sick for whatever reason, you know, obviously then in comes the reserve. So I think it's a real break for potentially a reserve driver. And we remember the where's and what for's for poor old Alexander Rossi when he tried desperately to get on the grid and on again, off again. And when he finally got there, you know, an uncompetitive car. But this could really give somebody from Alfa Romeo or Haas or wherever an opportunity, like a Delatraz, you know, who won the virtual Le Mans. So, I think it's an interesting one. The flip side of it is, my worry is that the COVID sort of economic ramifications could also halt potentially reserve drivers and F2 drivers' potential budget to go racing and to be in a position to be a reserve driver. And that worries me too, because that you might lose a driver from COVID, but you also might lose potentially a reserve driver by not, you know, by him not having the financial acumen to be able to go and stay with Formula One or be in a position to race, have the super license points.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of young reserve type, young drivers, I heard the news about Jamie Chadwick going into F3. Man, when we had her on the show last year, I think she was probably, in my opinion, the most impressive young driver we've ever had on the show. I don't know exactly how old she is, but I just remember she just blew me away in how mature and how smart. She was amazing.
Yeah, I agree. And she's been given a break like no other. She's been sponsored by an Australian who owns his own company called Roden, and has invested in her to go to the FIA F3. Of course, the W Series, which she was going to defend her title in, is no longer this year. So she was without a ride, and now she's got the premium ride, and literally premium, because she's going to be racing for Prima, the Italian F3 team, who are multiple champions. And it's a dream come true, and it really does, for the first time in my mind, put a woman in a position to make it to Formula One through the traditional ladder.
You know, after talking to her that day last year, I was like, I immediately went there in my head, is that this woman could go to Formula One. And I know she's proven herself on the track in the W Series. And obviously, if they're bringing her into F3, there's thoughts there. So she's probably the most exciting woman in motorsports right now. And I'm really waiting to see how this plays out.
One of the things is FIA and Formula One have said that they're going to focus more on the women of motorsports. And so I think all of this is happening at the right time. And in particularly for Jamie, this is great, because they said they're going to be looking more so here. I'd love to see her come in and get that F1 seat somehow.
Yeah.
Well, she's certainly going to be up against it, because she's going to be having equal equipment. They have got the top team. I can almost guarantee you that one of those drivers will probably win or be the runner up in that championship. So if she's nowhere near them, you know, that is not good. But if she is close, and if not a race winner herself, she's gonna really turn some heads.
Yeah, for sure, no doubt. Hey, Les, I saw you put something in the notes, and I'm really, I haven't heard a lot of people talking about this, and it's a really good story. It's essentially how F1 is talking about a balance of power, balance of performance. I mean, because the wind tunnel time, how depending on where the teams finish in the championship standings, is the higher up you finish, the less wind tunnel time you're going to get. I mean, this goes along the same kind of lines you're talking about with salary caps and things like that, trying to bring some more balance into Formula One.
It is, absolutely. So wind tunnel time is expensive time, and it's real time. It is something where they're defining the downforce, the slipperiness of their vehicles and everything. But what they're looking at is there could be as much as, I think one example they provided was 12 hours per week difference of wind tunnel time. And so it gets pretty big in difference that if you're Mercedes and you're out front, well, you may get 20 hours or 25 hours of wind tunnel time. And then somebody at the back end, Williams, if they can afford it, they can get it at 10 or 12 hours more than Mercedes in that given period. The time frames are floating around as well as the scale, but that gives you an example of what to expect, that there could be a substantial difference if somebody has 20 or 25 hours and somebody else gets 35 hours in that same time frame, time period. So
yeah, this is part of the 2021 changes. So this would take effect really after 2021, but still, this is really revolutionary. Jonathan, you know the history of Formula One as good as anybody on the planet. I mean, have we had similar back at any point?
No, not that I know of. I mean, not in such a sort of not draconian is the wrong word, but not with such a sort of cause and effect way, which is because it as Les says, it's both expensive and it's key wind tunnel testing. And so if you do get a step up on that, back in Gary's time, there was only a couple of wind tunnels in Europe. So you had to beg, steal, or borrow time from another company and pay through the nose, because it's not like everybody's got a wind tunnel. They were basically used by the aeronautical world, by the plane world. So now there's more, but it's a really telling thing, and I encourage it. I think it's a good idea.
I think it is a good idea. I think we're going to see some creative accounting, such as maybe Mercedes pays Williams, put this nose on your car.
Yeah.
Let us know, we'll contract to you to do this, and then we get it back. Certainly, that's a way to put some coin in Williams' coffers and get that nose checked out.
Well, that's no different than Alfa Romeo, Toro Rosso have done for Red Bull when they took the Honda engine first.
Yeah. Yeah, good point. But it certainly has a kind of an American feel to it, doesn't it? Where, the NBA and NFL have done such a fantastic job of bringing parity through the sports. And I know that Formula One's just a whole different ball game, but pun intended. But it's I love this step in the right direction. And I think
I think you should do an NFL draft for the drivers every year. And basically, your first pick is Lewis Hamilton, because he's the world champion, and he may have to drive for Alfa Romeo or whoever.
Yeah,
whoever gets him in the draft.
I love it. Honestly, I'd love to see something that could anything that's going to bring parity into F1. But hey, guys, I want to talk a little NASCAR, because NASCAR did something that really was pretty astounding, considering all of the. Yeah, no.
And not crash.
No. But really, on a very serious note, with what happened with George Floyd and all the Black Lives Matter, all the racial tension throughout the world now, and NASCAR comes out and bans the Confederate flag, and stepped out ahead of every American sport. The NFL has fought against Colin Kaepernick's kneeling during the national anthem, and now they're starting to turn around. But NASCAR was the first one. Imagine that. I would have never guessed it, that NASCAR was going to do this first.
It blows my mind, and I take my hat off to Steve Phelps, who said he's actually been wanting to do this for a while, and this was the opportunity. Bubba Wallace obviously going on CNN and saying that that's what they should do, and everybody's talking about Black Lives Matter. But what a step, and yeah. I mean, it's a huge step, both politically and for sport. Like you say, they've got a real jump on both NFL, baseball's, you know, in a mess, basketball, they beat them to it. And, you know, as we all know, the black majority in sport in this country has a huge voice. And I think it's a really monumental historical moment for sport in America.
I agree. I'm very happy to see them step up because it is a huge cultural shift. I'll say I'm a bit disappointed that it took 52 years after Jim Crow for it to happen, but thank you for taking that initiative, standing up, knowing you've got a big audience that feels that way about that flag.
Yep. I think that NASCAR had a problem in that area, and I'm so glad they fixed it. All right, guys, well, we are out of time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks to Gary Anderson for coming on the show. And, of course, we will talk to you next Sunday.
Ciao, y'all.
Happy trails.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.